How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is July 10th, 2012. You're at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We have lots of news to talk about today, lots of shows to review, some spoilers, some news. What's going on, Dave?
I don't know. Seems like a lot. It's going to be a busy week.
Hell yeah.
Another show on Wednesday.
There's a fuel show on Wednesday that, I say it all the time, but no one's watching.
Yep.
And on top of that, I think we mentioned this on Saturday night, but Dana White was asked about who the coaches were going to be for the upcoming UK versus Australia season of The Ultimate Fighter. And he essentially said, I'll tell you on Wednesday, so some of you will actually come to the show. So they're not expecting much here.
Yeah, yeah.
You're
going to
be there.
I don't have time to be doing a press conference. He's got to leave right after the show for Australia.
That's right.
So I don't know. I don't even know if he'll be available tomorrow. I mean, on Wednesday, actually.
Somebody will have names.
At some point, yeah.
Somebody will have names. So, let's get into the show here today. I want to start off by giving my thoughts very quickly on Destination X. You gave your full review last night. I saw the show. It was a very good show. Kind of actually reminded me in some ways of the UFC show in the sense that I was not blown away by the undercard at all. And the last few matches, last three matches, particularly AJ and Daniels in the main event, AJ and Daniels was awesome. And the main event was good. It was interesting because we talked about this before with the crowd. This crowd, for the most part, kind of sucked throughout the evening. And it's a live show. It's in the same place they tape TV before a live audience, these same people.
I haven't asked anyone, and I really should. In fact, I'm going to make sure to do it tomorrow. Let me make a note to myself on this. It felt to me like the crowd was smaller than usual. I mean, it had a feel like when I was listening to the crowd, I thought that like when they would get into chanting and stuff, it felt like it was only a couple hundred people, as opposed to, you know, they usually can fit about 1,100 people in that building, and they don't know, they rarely get it for TV, but they usually do get it for pay per views, but.
I think if it were down, it'd be down to about 900, because we surely would have heard if they had like 400, 500 people in that building.
Yeah, but I mean, it just sounded like when they, like, you know, like when you would try to get the obvious chance, it sounded like there was like 20 people chanting as opposed to like, you know, 100
people
chanting.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you look at the matches here, I mean, the opener was the four-way, and it was an indie spot fest. Dakota Darso in particular was not ready for television, and It was just kind of, you know, when you open up a show with a match like that, I mean, you're starting off kind of on the wrong foot. And then Kid Cash and Mason Andrews, it's a match that nobody cared about. Douglas Williams and Kenny King. I mean, you had Douglas Williams, who at least people knew. I mean, they knew Kid Cash as well, and Kenny King. I would think that audience would have known the whole Kenny King story, but maybe not. I mean, they didn't really care much about that match at all. Cash and...
But Kenny King didn't, you know, in both of those matches, though, the veteran pretty much controlled the match.
Yeah, Cash
it was
and...
the exact same match, one after the other. So it didn't really give the new guy much of a chance.
Well, I mean, they're...
To shine,
they're...
but when they did, they didn't really...
Yeah, but
they
hold
didn't
on.
Really do anything. They didn't really sell well either.
Okay, but the goal of Kid Cash and Doug Williams was to make them look good. So they did all they
I don't
could.
Think they did.
The other guy had to hold up his end of the bargain. And Kenny King has just not looked good in any of his TNA matches. But
nope.
They've pretty much got him now. So there you go. Sanjay Dutt looked good. And good match with Rashad Cameron. So hopefully he returns. And
well, Sanjay Dutt will return for sure.
Yeah, Sanjay Dutt will be back for sure.
I don't know about Rashad Cameron. I don't know.
The thing with Dutt also is in the X Division... The Ultimate X match, he obviously got hurt early, separated his shoulder on a... He basically did a spot and hit the ropes in the middle of it and blew the shoulder out, and he ended up going backstage and ended up coming out for the finish, which really was just him and Zema Ion climbing to the very top of the X, and then Zema sprayed hairspray into his eyes, and he ended up falling off and everything like that. And I understand that, like, that was their finish, and Sanjay Dutt was going to be involved, and maybe none of the other guys wanted to get all the way on top of that X, but he was, I mean, he popped the shoulder back in before he came out, but he was obviously still hurting, and to me, it was kind of like, I don't know, Maybe someone else could have climbed, or it was kind of really hard to have the excitement.
That's quite the bump to take when your shoulder's already out.
It was, and it kind of, I don't know. I understand what happened, but at the same time, it sort of kind of hurt the match a little. And the match was short anyway, and certainly not the best Ultimate X match they ever had. Zema Ion and Flip Casanova was quick, I guess, because I don't even know why. Maybe they didn't have a lot of faith in the match, which was kind of interesting because Zema Ion ended up winning. Angle and Joe, good match, but not obviously to the level of some of their matches of the past, but I have nothing to complain about here. They worked really hard. They had a really good match. Samoa Joe now number one in the standings for the time being, so which is interesting because they're kind of telling the story of last year, if you recall. Samoa Joe ended up with minus 10 points.
If that's the story you're telling, they should tell it.
And they did kind of tell. They talked about. He did an interview. He said, kind of last year he was just looking to hurt people. This year he, I love the line. He understood what he needed to do this year. Like somehow last year he didn't understand what he needed to do in this.
Yeah, like win matches.
Tournament. Yeah. So now he's determined to win, and maybe it might be him and James Storm there in the semifinal prior to Bound for Glory this year.
It could be. You know, usually I don't know. They may change it this year, but last year, if you remember, they do two matches, and whoever has the most points at the end of the two matches, as opposed to two matches and then a championship match. So there's a lot of different ways they can go as far as who's in the final four and all that. I would figure the final four would be James Storm, Jeff Hardy, Joe, and I'm not sure off the top of my head who the fourth guy would be. It could be RVD. Anyone at Kurt. Kurt would probably be, I would think that Kurt might actually be a good shot at being the other one, which again, you'd get two good singles matches. The thing that I don't understand on this is that they pushed that time limit thing so big in the beginning, then they changed it, and then now it's like they never bring it up. Yet it should be like part of the strategy, the whole thing, and especially like in this match, they should be doing time cues and everything because the whole match to me felt like they were teasing the 15 minutes and going, they went 14 and a half minutes before they did the finish. But if they're going to do that and they don't tell anyone the time, nobody else is sitting there with their, watch in front of them or the timer in front of them to go, oh my God, they're teasing a finish. It was really weird that, and should be explaining that, like, these guys have to go. They only have 15 minutes. It's not like any other match, blah, blah, blah,
Did you? I did not get that impression that they were teasing a time limit finish.
No, but that's why they went 14 and a half minutes.
Are you sure? Or did they just go 14 and a half minutes?
Well, 14 and a half minutes in a 15-minute time limit, what is it?
I don't know. Maybe they could have gone 17 and nobody would have mentioned anything because it was on pay-per-view. They're certainly not making a big deal out of it.
That's possible, but they went 14 and a half minutes.
It may have just been a coincidence. Who knows? They certainly didn't play it up as being anything. So.
No, that was my whole point. They didn't mention it at all.
So maybe there are going to be no time limit draws.
When you've in the past talked about that time limit, when the tournament started, they talked about it. Then the next week when they switched the time limit, they talked about it again. And then they don't talk about it at all. And yeah, it should be part of the strategy of these matches. It's like, okay, you've only got a limited time limit. That's the whole point of... why do you have a time limit? Why did you bring up the time limit?
Well, I think what happened
at the beginning of the tournament.
I think what happened was at the beginning of the tournament they had a 10-minute time limit because the idea was they wanted to push the 10 minutes. They wanted the story to be that these guys had to work faster. They had to pull out all the stops because they had to get this match over in 10 minutes. Then they realized 10 minutes isn't enough time. It gets difficult when you have to have commercial breaks. It gets difficult when you're on pay per view. So we'll announce that the matches now have 15-minute time limits, which is why they announced it the next week, and then. I presume they're just never going to have anybody go to the time limit, and it'll never
be
mentioned again.
Go to the time limit twice, or once or twice already.
Well, maybe not at this point ever again. Are these house show matches that went the time limit?
I'll bet you that they may not. You're right. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. I would bet that they will, just because it's a way to get people. They'll do everything that involved with the point system. I mean, because the time limit's part of the point system.
We had AJ and Daniel's Last Man Standing, which was a great match. This was a showcase of two guys that are, this sounds stupid, but this is a fact, they're great workers. And the reason I bring that up is because you could see a million AJ Styles, Chris Daniels matches, and many of them would be pretty much the same match, but this time they decided to go in, and unlike a match I'll never forget, Triple H and Randy Orton at WrestleMania after Triple H beat up Randy Orton in his house or whatever the stupid angle was, and they start their epic battle with a lockup. These two dudes are having a blood feud, and so they went in there and they had a blood feud match. They beat the crap out of each other. Wasn't a lot of, they did their spots, but like, you know, AJ did the Pele on the ramp, and finish was a Styles Clash off the ramp through a table. There's double juice. They basically had a great, well-worked, awesome fight, which is exactly what they should have had in this situation, and they pulled it off perfectly because they're awesome. So this was great. There was no Claire Lynch. There was nothing weird. It was just two guys having a fight and AJ beating them in the end. Styles Clash off the ramp is noted, and this was a great match. We had Ultimate X, which I talked about. Not too much of note there except Zema Ion won. They, of course, are building up the Jesse Sorensen feud. He came out earlier and did his promos he talked about yesterday, and clearly that's going to be the match they're going to do whenever Jesse Sorensen is able to return. I don't know when that's going to be. I think Bound for Glory is probably way too early. I mean, he was backstage like 3 weeks ago, and he was still in the neck brace. He took it off very briefly, and to me, I mean, the idea that he's going to be back in the ring in like 3 months, I don't know about that one, but we'll see. And then Ed Sorensen, by the way, vowed to beat Ion for the X Division title, hold it until Destination X in 2013, and cash it in that night and win the heavyweight title. So we'll see if that happens. And then finally, Bobby Roode and Austin Aries, they had a good match. Crowd wasn't really into it until near the end. I think the match got to a point where they realized that, in fact, Austin Aries had a chance. I don't know if it was a certain spot. I don't know if it reached a certain amount of time, but they figured it out. And as soon as they did the spot where he got hit by a belt and he kicked out, I mean, the fans were in it from that point forward because I think they kind of knew something could happen here. And in fact, it did. Kick to the face, brainbuster, clean pin. Awesome post-match celebration, which is what you should do when a guy has held a title for 7 months or whatever it is, and they've pushed him as the longest reigning champion of the current, I guess the current TNA, since it, I guess, changed the name or whatever. But Austin Aries won, and in fact, for a trivia note, Austin Aries was in fact the longest reigning champion. Not heavyweight champion, but he was a significantly longer reigning champion than Bobby Roode, and he won the title, so they got over the belt. They got over the stipulation, they got over the X title, they got over the X division. It's quite the deal here, and a great way to end the show. So, thumbs up show, the third in a row from TNA, so pretty much on a roll here. So there you go. Let's get into Raw. What did you think of the show?
Well, I guess the fact that every year when they go against Home Run Derby, their rating is down. And they obviously wrote that with that in mind, with the idea that we are going to, you know, I mean, this is every ratings trick in the book. And that's what it was. And usually shows with where they're, you know, determined, you know, they're working on ratings. And even though it's the go-home show for a pay-per-view, it's like we're afraid we're going to get a bad rating if we do a go-home show for a pay-per-view. And so they didn't do it. They did a ratings show. And it wasn't a pretty good show in my mind. In fact, I don't know, just a lot of stuff, you know. And again, it may work as far as ratings, but I don't know what that, you know. It's again, you're mix. You kind of miss the whole point on a go home show, and also the means to the end. I mean, ratings in and of themselves, especially when you're in like a 5-year contract, the rating of one show. It's like it's really not important. What's more important is that the ratings are important as far as like general pattern and everything like that, especially when it comes to the last couple of months of the contract and your negotiation period, and when the station needs the ratings as well, like if it sweeps or something or whatever it is, if they're in a close race for number one, like USA is often in. So you know, Raw is very valuable when it comes to that to USA. But, you know, like a singular rating is really not that important if it's not a pattern thing. And this was a show that, you know, it was, you know, the whole thing of we're going to tell you who the GM was, in that thing. We're going to answer that question, which was quite a dud. We're going to turn it to be Hornswoggle. You know, build the whole thing about, you know, who AJ is going to marry.
Did you say kind of a dud?
Yeah.
That had to be like an all-time historic dud as far as a payoff.
Oh, horrible. Yeah.
Hideous.
Yeah, I agree. You know, just like, when it's over, it's like, why'd you even bother, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they never paid it off, so there was always that part of me in the back of my mind that was like, you know, someday they'll bring it back for a couple of weeks and reveal it to be somebody important. But yeah. I invested, I don't know how many hours of my life into that damn storyline, and in the end, they have blown it off, and it was just Hornswoggle.
Yeah.
Good God almighty.
They did that to Hornswoggle before. Remember when Vince McMahon's son?
That's right.
Hornswoggle as well?
That's right.
Yeah.
No wonder he was nominated for the GM for all those months.
Yeah.
Anyway, it opened up with AJ actually opening and closing the show again. She came out and talked about how she was the referee and said she was unhappy about CM Punk telling her that she was mentally unstable and that sort of deal. So finally, Punk came out and said, listen, I'm sorry if that offended you. I don't know what to say. And she ended up saying that, basically she got on her knees and she proposed. Will you marry me, CM Punk, she said. And this brought out Daniel Bryan screaming no, no, no. And he said, listen, this man does not care about you. He only cares about you because you're the referee in the match. I have never stopped having feelings about you. And Punk said, listen, let's just cut to the chase. Bryan proposed to AJ after AJ had proposed to Punk. This went on forever. Finally, the GM signed a match, Punk and AJ against Bryan and Eve. And I think this went like 18 minutes, and it was too much for me.
Well, you know, not only that, but like the rest of the show, they were playing catch up.
Oh, my God.
You know, like they would, you know, cut off, you know, guys would be in the ring with no intros in a couple of matches.
Yeah.
And, they the time, this whole show, there was like the first match was like 54 seconds or 57 seconds, and then the next match was a minute 25, and the next match was 35 seconds. You basically had everything was, you know, completely rushed from this point on, other than when they got to the John Cena match, they took their, you know, they went forever, I guess because of the, who knows why.
You had mentioned in The Observer that they're going to be building around AJ, and they're huge fans of AJ, and she is doing well in her role, but my God, the entire point of this was to see how long can we keep AJ on the screen before we have to move to something else. And they dragged it out long past the point it needed to be dragged out for this segment.
Yeah, I don't even know why, because she hasn't even shown any evidence of being, you know.
It doesn't matter. They this is the thing.
They're just in love with her. The thing also is to me is like, when other guys are out there talking and she's doing the faces and everything, she's really good. And obviously that's what got her over in the first place, or however over she is, because for someone who gets so much TV time, you know, when she was out there doing her promo, I mean, there was a lot of stuff on the show tonight that was getting no reaction involving her. And when she was out there doing the promo early, I mean, she did her lines and everything, but they were doing the what, you know, it was all the signs of something of like, you know, that it was, whether it's going too long or she doesn't have the presence until, you know, when Punk came out, I mean, it's really obvious to me watching these three, when they come out, when they talk, that to the fans, I mean, Punk is a big, big star, and she's not seen like that. She's seen as someone in the Punk storyline, and Daniel Bryan is a good adversary for Punk, but the company sees her as the storyline, the key person, and the other two are the guys along for the ride.
Well, I think it's also the fact that CM Punk is great as the guy that this crazy woman is in love with, and he really wants nothing to do with her, but he's trying to be nice. Daniel Bryan is trying to use everybody. She's out of her mind. But the bottom line is, who cares?
Well,
I mean, who cares about the storyline?
They think people care because they're building the whole show around her.
Well, if you watch the segments, no one cares.
Well, we're going to find out tomorrow.
I mean, they care because Punk is out there because they like him. And I think they care about Daniel Bryan because he's entertaining. And I think, obviously, there's a segment that loves AJ.
But hey, well, here's the other one, too. They don't like the fact that Daniel Bryan's yes, yes, yes is for a heel, so they're transferring it to her.
Yeah, but
and thinking that that's going to get her over like crazy.
It's not going to work.
Because everybody wants to chant yes, yes, yes right now. So if they give it to her, then she's a big star.
I'm begging for her to come out with the Money in the Bank winner, cash it in, and actually that would probably still have her involved with both guys, actually, because it would be a three-way feud. Oh, my God, this is going to go on all summer, and I'm done with it at this point, but... Well, everyone is playing their roles well.
Again, if they got the right storyline, it may work. The only thing is on tonight's show, I just...
Dave, remember that...
They didn't do it. And again, it's the same thing that I said before. It's like, now I really have even less interest in Daniel Bryan and Punk's match than I had last week. And I was losing it. I mean, they've made me lose interest in this match.
Do you remember...
Because the whole match is all about who is AJ going to choose to win as opposed to I'm going to see a match for the world championship.
Do you remember? I remember, and I'm sure you do as well, very, very vividly, the Triple H, Kurt Angle, Stephanie McMahon love triangle. And
yeah, that's
completely
different from this.
Granted, it had a hideous payoff, but goddamn, that was a great storyline. And this is just...
Yeah, but...
It's not even a storyline.
I think the thing on that one is that, it's number one, Stephanie really was much better than her, and Kurt was, you know, as a personality at that time, was much better than Daniel Bryan, as good as Daniel Bryan is. And then Daniel Bryan's been good, but Kurt was at a different level. Whatever it was, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying, like, this thing's I don't know. You also had a better writer at the time, you know, than they have now. I mean, and I think that's a big part of it, too.
I will say, to be fair... And when she proposed to CM Punk, the place went nuts. So that was at least a good little twist. Although it did end with, after everybody had proposed to everybody else, AJ just said, well, let's think about this for a while. It's like, wow, you know, thank God Whitney didn't say that. We had the GM computer, as noted, signing the match for later on. And Michael Cole did the announcements and everything like that. And people remembered the computer. It got a lot of heat. And what a payoff we got out of it. Sheamus and Jack Swagger. Sheamus beat him with a brogue kick in like seconds. And then Alberto did this promo. And he just vowed to take the title and got in his car. That was it. And then Sheamus hit another brogue kick. And that was the end of that. So there you go.
Good night for Jack Swagger.
Santino and Zach backstage talking about Friday night. Zach down. It's coming up Friday. We'll talk about that in a moment. And they announced that Mick Foley and The Rock are both going to be at the 1,000th episode of Raw. We had...
That show, you know, that may be a hell of a show, just because of the star power.
I actually, well, I don't know. It's to me, here's I'll actually talk about this right now, because I thought about it during the main event, or the top of the hour main event. When I watched John Cena and Kane against Big Show and Chris Jericho, first off, the finish infuriated me.
I would agree on that. When you do a match and you go past the 15-minute mark, you need a better finish than that bullshit.
It wasn't
like if it was a 2-minute match. I mean, I probably still wouldn't like it, but it wouldn't be as bad. But
the finish.
I mean, when they did that finish, when that bell rang, I was like, I can't believe that anyone actually thought this was a good finish.
The finish they did. Was one guy went for a pin and another guy pulled him out of the ring. This happens in every tag team match ever.
Yep.
But tonight it was a disqualification after the match went through two commercial breaks. Now, granted, it was not a bad match, but this match did not need to go through two commercial breaks. Finish aside.
Well, I'm not going to knock the time if the match is okay.
I'll tell you why.
If they had a good finish, it would have been fine.
I'm going to tell you why I'm knocking this going that long. Because this match went through two commercial breaks, and to me, one of the main reasons that John Cena and Kane against Big Show and Chris Jericho went through two commercial breaks is because they didn't have enough stuff to fill up a 2-hour show. And now we're moving to 3 hours. Now, I'm not saying this about the 1,000.
Well, I think that what I think they were trying to do is that again, I think this was clearly to me again a show where they looked and they just go like, you know, we may get hurt in the ratings, so we're going to do a rating show. And I think that they were looking at, you know,
so now it's wrestling?
What?
Now it's wrestling to get ratings?
No, Star Power. Star Power. John Cena is their biggest ratings draw. And they were, you know, they got AJ at the beginning, AJ at the end. So you want as much John Cena as you can in that middle segment. And the other thing is that at 10:15, when all those people, you know, usually tune out, you know, the key was is they kept this match going until whatever, I think it was ended. I think the segment ended about 10:22.
It just doesn't seem like typical WWE booking. I would expect them to do like a 15-minute John Cena monologue followed by a 5-minute match.
Well, no, but they did a monologue too.
It was short.
Yeah, but they did it.
Anyway, my point is, I expect on the 3-hour Raws that we're going to be having a lot of matches that are going through two commercial breaks, and they're not going to be with necessarily great workers because the talent level in this company is
slim. The only matches that are going to go through two breaks are going to be with main event guys. I mean, and again, maybe they won't all be, you know, again, you got Kane, Big Show in this match. I thought the match was all right, but it didn't.
It was all right.
Yeah, at no point. But
15
in their
minutes
mind,
in that
again,
finish?
These are four top guys, and so they can go long, and it wasn't like it was... This match being long wasn't the problem. Even if they had a good finish, it would have been just fine. I mean, not necessarily great, but it would have been fine.
They didn't have a good finish at all.
Well, I mean, that was the problem with the match. I don't know... Again, it was really weird to me because it's like, how many people does this stuff go through? You know, I mean, it goes through layer after layer after layer, and somebody should just go... You know, if we're going to, we need a better finish for this match.
Point I was making in all of this is that I think we're going to see more of these matches on the 3-hour Raws, but I think on the 1,000th Raw, I actually don't know if that's going to be like a great show because they've got so much stuff and so many people coming in that I just see them doing like, I don't know, 28 segments in 3 hours.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a lot of guys. People, it's going to be good in the sense that you're going to see a lot of guys. Especially like with The Rock there and you know, Foley and God knows who, Brett. I think just that they're all going to have to make their appearance. And I mean, you know, they may not have great stuff for them, but even if it's just short, and I think if The Rock's going to be there, they're going to be short. I think that what's going to happen is that, you know, that star power will carry the show. I mean, the interesting thing is well... You know, you got the Brock and Triple H segment, which is probably going to be the key thing on the show anyway. So, I think they'll get I think that the verbal stuff will probably be very good on the show, and the wrestling will be kept to a minimum. I'm pretty sure the wrestling's not going to be long on that show. Well, even maybe with 3 hours, they'll be able to get one long match in there or something. But even I'll tell you what, this will be one of those shows where even the 3 hours they're cramming stuff.
Oh yeah. Tensai and Ziggler beat Christian and Tyson Kidd immediately.
Was Tyson Kidd ever in that match? I guess he was.
I think he was very, very briefly.
Yeah.
He got destroyed by Tensai afterwards. Tensai pinned Christian. I guess they decided maybe we shouldn't have beat Tensai last week, so now he's got to beat up a bunch of guys. Can't make up their minds.
Why, though?
I don't know. He's big. They decided they want more big guys.
I mean, if I look at these guys and look kind of like the value at the guys, of the four guys in here,
don't look at their value. Look at their size. That's what Vince does.
Okay, but I'm looking at especially like where they are right now. Okay, Christian's the Intercontinental Champion, and that's not necessarily a big deal. Ziggler's been having all these good matches, although he always loses. And Tyson Kidd, granted, is you know, someone who they've used as a job guy, but they've started to give him credibility. And so there's a little bit, you know, it's that thing of don't pull the rug out from under him. Type of thing, and they didn't. I mean, he was, you know, he didn't get pinned. He was just kind of in for a second and got thrown around. But Tensai is the, you know, the worst of the four, the least over of the four, and you know, and plus it's like you, I don't know. It's when Christian's in a match, you just kind of always expect it to go like 6 or 7 minutes and like good, you know, like a good match. And
didn't have time
with a senton.
Didn't have time.
Yeah.
Michael Cole and Lawler had an argument, which led to the computer announcing they'd wrestle later. And
Cole threw water on him.
Yeah, Cole was upset, so the computer said it was going to have the fans vote as to whether or not they should see this match.
You know what's hilarious? Is what if they voted no? I mean, I thought it was like, I would have said, well, I would have never even thought it was possible, but then when it was like 75-25, it's like, which is still pretty much of a landslide. I was thinking like, you know.
They'd have lied.
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, you know, one of the things on this thing that we need to talk about was that, what was it, that Raw deal, the new name for the, that all those goofy things they're going to be doing, starting with that 1,000th show, you know, with...
I forget the name they used.
Yeah. The thing was, is okay, we're going to have, you know, polls during the show to vote, which we already knew, that had been said before, but they're going to have people like, you know, encourage people to post videos that will play on the air. And I was just thinking that, like, this, I mean, now you're going, like the polls thing, if you do it sparingly and you do it, you know, even if it's once every show, that's cool, you know, because it's something, it's just part of the show, you know, and just this whole push of, what was it like, you know, the idea that, you know, again, like, what was it? It was fans' videos, and you're putting that on the show. I was thinking, like, this is not, you know. I mean, like, again, I've seen enough fan videos when they do that. Like, TNA tried that once, and WWE's tried it a couple times. And, you know, with WWE, when they do it, it's all planted anyway. But even so, it's like a waste of time. You know, and if you do it for real, it's usually hideous. So that was kind of like, you know, I don't know. Some of the stuff, is probably okay. It's a work in progress anyway. It's going to be interesting to see how it all works. I could see some of the stuff maybe being, you know, very good, and some of the stuff, you know, whenever you do new stuff, some of it may work and a lot of it may not. And I guess if it doesn't, you just throw it out. I just hope that the stuff that doesn't work, they just don't embrace because they feel they need to, because they need to be on the cutting edge.
Rhodes beat Drew McIntyre quickly. And,
you know, the thing on that match was, is that, They were only out there for about a minute, like every Brodus match. But in that entire minute until McIntyre came off the top rope into that headbutt, it was like every single thing physically those two guys did, it was terrible. I mean, you know, it was like they didn't do much. It's like usually like it takes a couple minutes for a match to fall apart. Like this one, it was like these two guys that just had no idea how to work with each other. And it was only a one-minute match. How hard is that to work?
Apparently pretty hard. A lot of pressure.
I guess I felt bad for
McIntyre. Maybe they had an 8-minute match and it got cut, so they were frazzled.
I don't think that those guys were booked for a long match. I, you know, 'cause they never
it was a 2-minute match and they had half of it cut out.
Well, that's actually possible, but I don't even think... Like if you see Brodus and Drew, you're thinking it's, you know, 90 seconds, 60 to 90 seconds. I mean, I would think that going in.
We had Santino looking for the GM, the Sherlock Holmes cap, and he had a magnifying glass, because that's what you look for clues with, apparently. We had the tag match with the horrible finish. Had John Cena cutting a promo there, vowing to win the Money in the Bank briefcase on Sunday, so I guess he's winning.
Not necessarily, but I got that impression that he was winning, too, just by from his promo, yeah.
We had Eve and Punk backstage. He made sure to bury her for her fake tan, which actually I don't even know if it's fake, because she... lives in L.A. and she's Hispanic, so maybe it's not even fake. But
I'm sure it was. Yeah. I'm sure it's a spray on tan.
So she then did a promo on him about how he'd been overshadowed by everybody this year: Cena, Rock, Triple H. She didn't mention they'd all headline, and he hadn't headlined a single pay per view during that period.
Well,
but
you don't want to go that far.
Well, they did go that far. They just didn't specifically.
They didn't use those words. They just said that you've been overshadowed by what names did they say? Triple H, Cena.
Rock, Cena, Triple AJ. H, even Brock Lesnar, she said, as
Brock
if he's
Lesnar.
The
yeah, well,
least
I'm
of
glad,
the...
I'm glad he got a mention on the show.
So she walked away, and he was frazzled by this.
Yeah, he got told off by Eve.
Then Tino thought great Cully was the GM. Cully had a cell phone. He said he was. He said he wasn't. He didn't understand how to use a phone. It's Cully comedy. We had Sin Cara beating Heath Slater in a Money in the Bank qualifier.
Nobody cared about this at all.
And why would they?
Because it's Sin Cara, and he's got different
Who got
lights.
Destroyed in a minute by Del Rio last week and made it look like a fool?
Yeah, well, can't get over.
Yeah.
What happens?
Then Bob Backlund came out after Slater issued a challenge to any former champion. And Backlund, at 62, had abs. And he...
Did he have abs?
Yeah, he did at the end there. When he celebrated on the turnbuckle, he most assuredly had abs.
I mean, he's, you know, for his age, he's in good shape, but I don't know about a 62-year-old man in wrestling trunks. I don't know if that's necessarily a good idea.
I've seen worse-looking dudes in...
Oh, no! I have, too, but I'm just saying that it's a general rule, you know...
As a general rule, you're correct, but this is Bob Backlund.
I mean, he's in great shape for a 62-year-old guy, but he did look completely out of place.
Got the cross-face chicken wing on, and Slater tapped.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah, I mean, people didn't know who he was at all, pretty much. You know, so
Cole beat Lawler via disqualification.
This was terrible too.
Lawler won with Lawler may have been well, he wasn't the only one, but he was maybe the only one in WWE, at least Raw history, to win a match with an airplane spin. And Booker had thrown Cole into the ring after Cole had tried to bail, and so the GM announced that Cole was now the winner via DQ. And we had a bunch of insanity and inanity, and out came Santino to pull Hornswoggle out from under the ring. He was, in fact, revealed as the mystery GM after all these months and years, and I guess he's a heel now because he just screwed Jerry Lawler, or they forgot about that when they were writing this, and he kicked some dudes.
Oh, he's going to be a great heel.
Bit dudes on the ass, ran
well,
away.
That wasn't heel stuff because, you know, he kicked Michael Cole at the end.
I bet they never again in history mentioned that he was the guest GM.
I would think you're probably right, because what's the point?
Yeah. This was lame.
This segment was terrible. I mean, it was really... Yeah.
Hideous. Hideous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was terrible.
AJ and Punk beat Daniel and Eve Torres. The big spot was the girls got in. They did some wrestling. AJ, she's taking Kelly's rope-running gimmick. Although it does, I will give her...
She's better than Kelly.
I'll give her
that,
the
though.
Benefit of the doubt because she's so short. You actually can't run across the ring in three steps when you're 4'8" or whatever she is. So,
she's not 4'8". She's like 5'2", 5'1".
I bet she's 5'1". I don't even think she's 5'2".
She's not that much shorter than Daniel Bryan when you see him together.
Oh,
I mean, she's definitely short.
I think she's a full head shorter than Daniel Bryan. He's probably 5'8".
Well, he's like 5'8", yeah.
Yeah, so 5'1", 5'2", anyway. She went to tag... Actually, it was Eve Torres went to tag Daniel Bryan in, and he just dropped off the apron. So AJ rolled her up, pinned her. Eve was never seen again. They got in the ring. Punk said, listen, this will probably cost me the title, but I just want you to know that I'm not going to marry you. And Daniel Bryan said, I just proved that I would sacrifice a match for you. It's not all about wrestling with me. And she ended up slapping Punk. Ryan was so happy until she slapped him, and then she left. That's your
cliffhanger. You're supposed to leave with her husband. That's what the whole tease of the whole show was.
That's right.
I will leave with my future husband at the end of the show. That's what they were, you know, trying to hook people to stay till the end of the show for. And then she's marrying herself.
Well, she can't predict the future.
I know, but that was what the whole tease was.
Well, now the tease is, who is she going to turn on?
Well, we know that. Who's she gonna? You know what's? Yeah, she's going to determine the world champion on Sunday.
Yeah, or maybe
second straight pay per view. We've had that story.
I still expect that she calls it right down the middle. Punk wins, and then Money in the Bank cashes in, and she leaves with that guy. That's my prediction.
Oh, that's fine. So who would? Let's see. So but that would have to be Cena though. Is that going to happen?
Well, it could be on the other brand.
No, they've already said brand specific.
I still don't buy that. Hey, you know what? If they want to build around her, maybe it will be John Cena.
Oh, that won't be good for John Cena.
Oh, come on. This legal mumbo-jumbo, it's all... Anyway. All right.
Maybe Kane. Maybe Kane. Maybe
Actually,
Kane
that would
thing.
Be the
maybe
best.
Maybe Kane wins it, and then would... her and Kane get together, and...
That would make the most sense of anything. Because Kane has just disappeared. He calmly broke up with her, and that was the end. So that was just part of the storyline.
Yeah.
That actually would make a hell of a lot of sense. All right, let's talk about the SmackDown tapings. This was taped the same night because tomorrow's show or Tuesday's show had been canceled due to wildfires, which is...
Tommy Rich.
Well, not that wildfire. We had Zack Ryder come out and try to get everyone to fist pump. I bet that worked out well. Alberto Del Rio came out, made fun of Ryder. And so Ryder, as revenge, announced Del Rio versus Sin Cara, who Del Rio had killed 2 weeks ago. So Del Rio proceeded to kill Sin Cara again. We had Big Show saying, well, Zach, you're doing a horrible job here. And Ryder said, fine, you will face the Great Khali.
Well, he's doing a horrible job.
That's right. Primo beat Darren Young. Sheamus was Zack Ryder backstage. Jericho interrupted. Ryder signed the two to a match. We had Cody and Dolph beating Santino and Christian when Dolph pinned Santino, who I believe is still the U.S. champion, although
he
it doesn't matter.
So maybe they'll do Dolph and Santino match at the pay-per-view, maybe? By the way, they did announce Kofi Kingston and R-Truth against Unico and Camacho. As the YouTube match, yeah.
Mm. Ryback?
Me excited to get to watch that one early.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait.
Well, you know, the last one was what, Bros Claim the Miz or something.
Big Show beat Great Khali with a knockout punch. Ryback beat Tyler Rex, which plays off the deal from SmackDown this past week. He killed his partner. Damian Sandow beat Justin Gabriel, and then Sheamus beat Chris Jericho, and then Del Rio put Sheamus in the armbar and left him laying. So there's your final build to the pay-per-view on the SmackDown side. So it appears that Chael Sonnen's manager is claiming that Chael is going to file an appeal based
on... He's not going to file an appeal. I mean, he won't. Because they called up Keith Kaiser. Keith Kaiser told them that he can file an appeal, but ain't going to work.
Well, he still claimed he's going to file an appeal.
No, they're going to appeal to Dana for a rematch. They're not going to try to appeal they wanted to appeal the decision. They called up. They asked for his manager asked for like what Scott McQuarrie. They asked like, you know, what do we have to do? Because Keith Kaiser told me that they called up and they asked. And he explained to them what it was, and then he explained to them the rules and why it would be extremely unlikely that anything changes or was ruled on this one. And because they're doing it on the idea that the idea is that, yes, the knee hit the chest, but the point of the knee hit the chest, but if you the top part of the knee hit the face.
You mean his thigh? Is that really the top part of a man's knee, his thigh?
I don't know. But his face was hit. But it's an interesting thing because the actual idea of the rule, is that you can't be struck, you know, with the leg. But the rule was the knee or the foot because those are the parts of the leg that you know. You know, like in theory, if you do like an instep kick to the face, it's not the foot and it's not the knee, but that would be considered illegal. So it's what we have here is a rule that, like the intent of the rule would be one thing, but the rule itself is very vaguely written. It's not going to make a slight bit of difference in this one, and Dana's already pretty much, I think he's already made up his mind that this is a completely legal move and nothing's going to happen, and they're not going to do a rematch. So, I mean, it's not going to go anywhere. But as far as the rule itself, the idea that, again, the face was hit on, you know, by the leg, and that was the whole idea of this rule is that none of that stuff's supposed to happen. But it is technically legal because of the way they wrote the rule. But just like the same thing, like I said, like with the instep or the shin or something like that hitting the face, you know, that all those things would be. I think that you know, a kick with a shin to the face would be considered completely illegal. So I don't know. I guess because it would be called a kick.
That reminds me, by the way, we should mention that in the Raw main event, CM Punk early in the match attempted a spinning back fist and he fell on his ass exactly like Chael Sonnen. And then Daniel Bryan did a running knee and, in fact, hit him in the chest in the corner. So CM Punk's management will also not be filing an appeal.
Yeah, well, considering I'm sure that CM Punk's the one who came up with the spot.
I'd like to add that not one single solitary person in the audience reacted at all to this spot.
Yeah, well, why would they?
I don't know. I would think at least some people would be
too quick.
UFC you
know what
fans.
I'm saying? I mean, it happened in a... It wasn't... What's the word I'm looking for?
I noticed it immediately.
Yeah, I don't think most people would have, though.
Hmm. How about that? Now, the UFC summit's going on right now, so perhaps they'll discuss some of this. They've got a lot of things on the docket, including, apparently, an announcement of in-house drug testing.
Well, the in-house drug testing was just... I mean, it was just... They encouraged fighters to do what BJ Penn and Rory McDonald are doing, which is go and get outside people to drug test past the commissions. They didn't make any announcement. The only in-house drug testing that they announced is that, you know, if they sign you to a contract, you have to get drug tested or else you're not going to get the contract. They did not announce we're going to start doing our own random testing. They may, and they did a big summit telling the guys, do not do any of this stuff. It's bad for you. Don't do cocaine. Don't do steroids. Don't do any of this stuff. They had, a doctor out there speaking, if you do cocaine, you probably won't be winning the championship, which, I mean, if you do it the week of the fight, certainly the night before the fight, I would say your odds are going to decrease greatly, but, whatever. But, and they were just warning them about, don't hang out with unsavory people.
Really?
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, don't allow Klingons, which is not a Star Trek term. Get on Twitter and all that. That's the key to the future of the sport is getting on Twitter. I mean, just that was the big things were they talked a little about the insurance. I think there were some modifications. I'm not exactly sure what they were, but there's a little bit of modifications in the policy.
Pre-existing conditions, apparently.
Well, that always was the case. In any insurance, if you have three pre-existing conditions, you have a problem. That's what happened with King Mo, is, why his medical bills are, like, so through the roof, because they wouldn't cover him because the knee was a pre-existing condition, even though the staff wasn't a pre-existing condition.
Well, so, apparently he'd be covered now.
Well, no, they don't cover pre-existing conditions. Do they do it now?
I thought that's what was being announced this week.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear that. I mean, you may be right. I'll ask.
The Rampage fight, his final fight, apparently, with Glover Teixeira.
Yeah, in Brazil on October 13th.
That's an interesting fight.
Yeah, because, usually when Joe Silva books a fight, the idea is you book the fight with the idea that if guy A wins, great, I can go in this direction. If guy B wins, great, I can go in this direction. This one, there's very clear that if Glover Teixeira wins, then it's great because they really boost him because, again, Glover Teixeira, he's only had one match in UFC. It was against Kyle Kingsbury. He murdered Kyle Kingsbury. But it was Kyle Kingsbury was in, and so Glover Teixeira is not a big name, and when they tried to put him against Shogun Rua, Shogun was like, no way, this guy, not only is he good, but nobody knows who he is, which is the worst kind of opponent, If you're going to fight somebody who's good, people need to think he's good, or else, what if he beats you? At least you got beat by someone who was good. But to have an unknown who's like really good and dangerous, they booked him with Rampage, who probably has no idea who he is, because Rampage doesn't follow the sport at all. And again, maybe Rampage. Actually, Rampage probably should have heard of him because he's been around. But then again, Rampage really doesn't follow the sport at all. And if somehow Rampage wins this fight, then they've managed to kill a contender, and in return, if Rampage is actually leaving, then they got no upside. But if Glover wins, he's just beaten Rampage, and that's probably more impressive to the fans than it actually is to people on the inside. But Glover at that point, they could probably go, one good contender match after that, and even go with John Jones and Glover if he beats Rampage with his in a quick manner, and considering how Rampage has looked of late, I don't know. Rampage isn't easy to finish. I mean, that's the one thing. Even though John Jones finished him, but it took John Jones several rounds to finish him. But he's slow and he really doesn't train that hard most of the time. And he's coming out. He'll be. I think he had knee surgery. He was supposed to have knee surgery, and so if he's coming off knee surgery as well, I don't know. Probably, you know, I think Glover's going to beat him. And so the way it's being booked, they're counting on something happening. The odds are that it will, but we all know about the odds in MMA that, you know, Rampage is a dangerous guy. So he may crack him if Glover gets a little bit careless.
So we have Pac, apparently, he's denying it. Or actually, he's not denying it. He's just saying, don't believe everything you read. Matt Taven and Sarah Del Rey all apparently signed to WWE.
Yeah, I think they're all going to go to developmental. Sarah Del Rey is an interesting one because, I mean, Pac's interesting because he's an awesome wrestler. He's also, I don't know if this means that they're going to do the Cruiserweight show in November or what it means. But, I mean, Pac could go to the main roster, but it's just hard because he's like an Evan Bourne, you know, better in most ways, and he's got a good body, but he's very short. And, you know, yeah, you could go, well, Rey Mysterio, but Rey Mysterio is special, and Rey Mysterio already made a name for himself. If Rey Mysterio hadn't made a name for himself, they would have buried him, and they even did try, just he was so over that the burying him didn't work, and then he fell into a good program that, you know, and the other one with Rey that was a key to Rey getting over is that every heel on the roster wanted to work with him. And I don't know if that's going to be the case with Pac. If it is, if every one of those guys just goes, you know, I think this guy's great, I want to work with him, then he'll get, you know, if the top guys do that and ask for the program and he gets that program, then maybe he can make it. But I have a feeling he's going to be like Tyson Kidd, who's in developmental forever, and they'll bring him up and they'll just kind of like not really know what to do with him. But unless it's the Cruiserweight show and all that. Sarah Del Rey is interesting because women like Sarah Del Rey have not historically been signed by WWE. So she's very good. But a very physical style, which they really don't like out of the women. It's like the antithesis. But the idea of the women going out there and doing their 2-minute match and everything has not been a big thing for ratings for a long, long time. So it's time for something new. And I don't know that Sarah Del Rey will be it, but the fact that you haven't had it, it's worth a try. You know, again, like,
I heard a couple people who believe that she's going to be going there to help train the women as well.
Well, they have guys who can help, but yeah, I mean, that couldn't hurt.
All right, let's do a few of the questions here before we wrap it up. This person wants to know, with Triple H's influence getting larger, what are the chances that WWE develops a working relationship with another promotion, such as one in Mexico or Japan?
Well, they've at times tried to work with AAA. It just never really worked out because the deal with when they wanted to work with AAA, the whole thing is they wanted to own AAA, and that's why it didn't work out. Anything's possible. I mean, it's possible with Vince McMahon too. And that's something really that wouldn't even be a Vince call so much as a Triple H call anyway, because that's kind of like would be where his department is. So, yeah, I mean, it's possible. The thing is that WWE, when they work with someone, they want to, they want to, like, get everything their way because they're WWE, and that makes it hard to work with people.
Person here wants to know, whose idea was it to put Paul Roma in the Horseman?
I think it was Ole Anderson, but I'm not sure.
Speaking of Ole, I heard that Ole Anderson tried to get WCW's production scaled back to something more basic and old school, getting rid of the ramp, etc., when he was the booker in 1990, and TBS vetoed it. Is this true, and do you have any more details?
It sounds right. I mean, I don't remember off the top of my head, but, you know, Ole was always for, you know, the basic stuff. So it would make sense because when Ole was wrestling, they didn't have a ramp, and they didn't have, you know, stuff like that. So, and plus, you know, yeah, it makes sense. I don't remember all the details of it, but those were the kind of fights that Ole had with Jim Herd. You know, I remember talking to Jim Herd, who, you know, I mean, Ole was a great booker at I don't know, 1976, 1979. By the early 80s, not so great. This was already 1990, and I just remember like Jim Herd when Ole was booker, and he would always go like, you know, if we can just get Ole into like 1991 or whatever year it was. You know, we'll be doing good, and it's like, I don't know that he's ever going to get there. And, you know, Jim Herd wasn't Jim Herd, unfortunately, didn't know anything about wrestling, and he was running the company. So you had a booker who was from another era, and you had a guy who's running the company who never had an era. That was, you know, they didn't do well at that point in time.
All right, one more. This person says, Backlund looked great tonight. Understand that Backlund had heat with McMahon for a number of years, hence him being off Raw for a while. Is his appearance tonight an indication heat is over? And is Backlund slated as the star inductee for Mania 29's Hall of Fame since Bruno has turned the WWE down?
I cannot imagine that he would be the main event guy.
Wouldn't Could Mick Foley be the main event guy or somebody what? Like that? Mick Foley, perhaps?
Yeah, I think Mick Foley could be. New York, yeah, I could see it being Mick Foley. That would make sense. But Bob, I wouldn't even think that Bob would be one of the guys who would get, the 1 hour thing, the treatment. As far as being a guy inducted, absolutely, I could see that. I pretty much expect that. But I expect he'll be called, yeah, because it's in New York and he was champion in New York, but. It's just been so many years, and he's just, again, like when he came out, nobody cared, nobody knew. And that's not the kind of a guy who you headline. Like, if they headlined it...
Well, there were some people that were chanting, "You still got it," and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, but that was...
I think it was a better reaction than Sid, perhaps.
No, Sid got a better reaction. People knew who Sid was, you know, when he came out. I mean, Sid didn't get a great reaction either, but Bob, when he came out, you know, he was really animated and stuff. People kind of like, there were people doing the "You Still Got It" before the match ever started, but he, I don't know, when he came out, you could tell that almost nobody in the building knew who he was. And when would they? It's Denver, you know. It's like, yeah, he had that little run in 93, 94, whatever years it was. That was, 18 years ago when he was champion. They didn't, number one, they didn't work Denver, and it was... You know, anything before 1984, not that many people know. So, yeah.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up for today, but we're going to be back on Wednesday night with more. We'll talk UFC on Fuel and all of the news over the next couple of days. We'll have new observers and Figure 4s. We've got a lot of stuff on the front page. So check it all out. We'll talk to you again after a while.